times have you looked at someone with lots of confidence and thought, that person is all confidence and no substance? How is it possible that so many of us have so much to offer, but we struggle with constant self-doubt, while others toot their own horns with very flimsy evidence to support their greatness? This week, I talk with Annie Margarita Yang, finance guru and author of the book, The 5-Day Job Search. Here, she shares her journey with imposter syndrome as she launched a career in accounting with no formal training. Over the years, Annie has come to believe in her own greatness by closing the gap between her competence and confidence. She also shares practical strategies to help you build your confidence, including embracing courage, which always comes first. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation. Welcome, Annie. It's such a pleasure to meet you today, and I'd love to start our conversation today by inviting you to introduce yourself.
Kim, thank you so much for having me on the Imposter Syndrome Files. A little bit about myself. So I am someone who didn't go straight to college. In high school, throughout school, I was like a straight A student. But because I come from a poor family background, I didn't go because I didn't want to take on any student loan debt. So after high school, I worked like just a whole string of minimum wage jobs. I remember back then, my guidance counselor, she told me that I would be a failure for the rest of my life if I didn't go straight to college. And, you know, a huge part of me didn't want to believe what she told me. So a lot of the times I did doubt myself because, hey, this adult who has real world experience has told me I am doing the wrong thing in my life, right? Eventually, I did go to college and I got a degree in communications. But afterward, I came out and I was working a job at Domino's Pizza. Mm. And then after that, you know, I was really sick and tired of not being given any opportunity because I feel like I'm capable. I'm so capable and smart. But it seems like nobody wants to give me opportunity. Nobody just wants to give me a chance to prove myself. So when my husband and I, we moved to Boston for his PhD program, I had it. I was like, you know what? I'm moving to a big city. It has opportunity. And I don't care what people say. I don't care what people think. I'm just going to apply to accounting jobs without an accounting degree. Because for several years, I learned to save money on a really tight budget. I got really good at money management in our personal life. And I managed our household finances perfectly, right? And I'm like, why can't I do this for a business? Why do I need an accounting degree to do this? So I just started applying to 50 jobs a day to see how it would go. And then I ended up getting an accounting position in a week. And this happened for three different job searches. I managed to get an accounting job with no degree in less than a week. But all throughout, I had imposter syndrome because I'm like, why are people hiring me? Why do they want me to do this? Like, don't they understand I don't have the formal qualifications to be here? You know, why aren't they hiring somebody who graduated from like Harvard to do this job? I don't understand, right? So it took me a really long time to overcome my imposter syndrome. It actually wasn't until this year specifically when I finally stepped into confidence.
So what's so interesting about that story is that you set out to find these jobs because there was a part of you that believed you could do it. There was a part of you that thought, this is what I want, you know, degree be damned, right? Like, this is what I want. But then once you got it, that's when the self-doubt creeped in. So how did you navigate that? Were you actively trying to overcome that doubt? Like, did you use specific strategies or did you just kind of plow through it? How did you cope?
Well, I'll be very honest. I was also inexperienced. I did not know what I was doing. So you cannot feel confident in doing something if you don't know what you're doing, right? So the first thing that I did was I had to go on accountingcoach.com and I read all of the material. I went on Udemy, I watched accounting videos, right? So I tried to get as much knowledge as I could. And every time I came across a problem at work, I was like, okay, how do I solve this problem? Can Google help me with this? You know? So every time I had a problem, I had to look up how to solve it. And then eventually it took a few years. It took like maybe 5 years before I felt like fully comfortable. I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. But even after logically understanding, like, I know what I'm doing. The work is perfect. The CPA is looking at my work at year end. They always tell my boss, like, this is good. There's no mistakes in it, right? Like, so no one was checking my work. It wasn't until tax time when they're like reviewing my work. Like, Annie's job is like, she did a great job. But even despite them saying that, I'm like, they must be kidding. I mean, like, there's no way, you know, there's got to be something wrong here. I mean, I'm like self-taught. I'm self-taught, right? So while I logically understood it, I didn't like emotionally connect with that, right? Even though like people were complimenting me and praising my work, I couldn't. And what really flipped the switch for me was, you know, Elizabeth Holmes with the Theranos scam. Mm-hmm. And she like really talked up this big game and she got like billions of dollars in investments. And then she just like lied and scammed people. And I was like, oh my gosh, that woman has so much self-confidence in herself, but no substance behind what she does. She speaks amazing things out of her mouth and about how great she is, but her work is terrible. In fact, it's ruined lives, right? And so when I saw that, I was like, I'm someone who actually deserves credit. And I need to step into that, right? Because we have people in this world like Sam Bankman-Fried, right? Who get all the credit, they get all the glory, the news media, like they chase after them. They write up these like 30 under 30 and then like these self-made, not millionaires, but billionaires because the stock options in their companies were worth billions, right? And I was like, that's not right. These people have not worked hard. They have not studied like I have. And they get to get all this praise. So finally, I was like, you know, I just need to accept that even though I don't feel confident, I do know what I'm doing. And then so when I finally just accepted that and then I did some affirmation work on that, I was like, you know, I deserve everything. Mm-hmm. Everything that I have, everything that I've built. I bought a house by 25 years old with no financial help from my parents. I have never asked my parents for money. I saved like always saved at least 10% of my income, most of the time 25 to 50% of my income. Like all of the great, amazing things that I have done, I deserve it. Like I was always like, I don't deserve it. Why has God given me such great things? No, it's because I worked hard for it. And when I finally just acknowledged this came from my hard work, I deserve all of this. My imposter syndrome just went away.
I love that story. There are several things that I love about what you're sharing. The sort of evidence-based approach to it, because I think so often we breeze right past all of the data that shows we actually do deserve to be in the roles that we hold. We actually do deserve credit for our successes. We're so quick to explain it away and to zoom in instead to what we don't know or to the mistakes that we've made. And so to be able to look at, no, actually, I'm doing really good work. I'm self-taught. I think that's such a powerful thing too, is that we often think, oh, I need some fancy degree in order to be
like
worthy.
You need external validation from some third party institution or person to say you are worthy. That's really what it is. I have nothing against college, right? Like some people need it. I admit, like some people learn better in a formal institution. They need to be held accountable. It helps them have discipline. It gives them like a social network. It's all in one place, right? But like in the end, your self-worth has to come from within. Like I have a friend. She does amazing work. Her photography is beautiful. Now she's an accountant. but like her hobby is photography, and she wants to build a side business in photography as well. Her photos, I look at them, amazing, right? And she only started doing this a year ago. And every time she shows me her photos, I tell her, this is so beautiful. And then she's like, do you really think so? Like, she's always questioning me, you must be lying to me. And I'm like, how many times do I need to say to you every single time, this is gorgeous. This is the most beautiful picture I have seen. Like, if I had to hire a photographer, I would pay for this, right? It doesn't matter how many times I say it to her, she doesn't believe me. So in the end, like, that's work she has to do on her own.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter like how many times someone, a friend, family member, like tells you, you're not a loser. You're amazing. You're not going to believe it. And that's on you. Like, you need to figure out like how to build up your own security, your own confidence and courage.
You're absolutely right. I think that's such an important point too, for us to think about when we do that to other people, because we are often the one dismissing feedback from others around us and making assumptions that, oh, they're just trying to be nice, or they're just telling me what I want to hear. And my philosophy on that is, do you trust the judgment of the person who's telling you this in other situations? Is this a person whose opinion you generally value, or who you think is, you know, generally a smart person? If so, why would you have any reason to doubt what they're telling you here?
Exactly.
I also really like the comparisons that you made, because I think too often we get dragged into the comparison game in a really negative way. We start looking around and thinking, this person's so much more qualified than I am. This person is so much smarter than I am. But you brought up examples of people who have skyrocketed to success. I mean, obviously, ultimately,
they
crashed and burned on the other side of that. But who have had nothing but confidence. And I think that's really important to look at, too, is look at the examples of people who have very flimsy evidence to support their confidence, to support, you know, the persona that they are pushing to the outside world, and really compare that with the substance that we have. I think that's a great, if you're going to compare yourself, that's the way to do it, right?
Yeah, I think so. And the problem is, there are so many people who are experts in their field. Like, they really know their stuff. They're brilliant. They have got great ideas. They can execute. But the problem is, they haven't, these people specifically, they have imposter syndrome because they don't know how to market themselves. Like, they don't know how to sell themselves in a way, like, they're just kind of detached, almost objective about how they are, to the point where, like, wow, this is amazing. Like, for example, I used to, like, so I wrote a first book when I was 22, is called 1001 Ways to Save Money, which eventually went on to sell 2000 copies, right? Most books, like over 90% of books, don't even sell 2000 copies. So the fact that I was able to sell 2000 is amazing. But I remember I applied for a mortgage, and then after moving in, I kept getting emails from the mortgage company. And one of them was like this talk given by three best-selling speakers, right? Three best-selling and award-winning. And then I was like, wait, if these are like best-selling and award-winning, why have I never heard of them? Right? Like, I'm like, how come they're able to put best-selling in their bio? I don't understand. And then I Googled all of them. I'm like, I have a bigger YouTube following than all of them as well. I mean, why are they getting talks and not me? I look up their book, because, you know, if they're a best-selling author, they've got to have some book, right? I find it on Amazon. They have hardly any reviews for the book. And I'm like, my book has more reviews than this. Now, review count is not reflective of how many sales you've made, but you can make the assumption that the more sales that you've made, the more reviews you have, right? And I was like, wait, I have more following than these people. I have more book reviews than these people. Probably have sold more books. How come they're able to call themselves a best-selling author and not me, and award-winning as well, right? And then I do a little digging, and I finally realize You don't have to be a New York Times bestseller or a Wall Street Journal bestseller or a Business Insider bestseller, like all these like lists to become a bestseller. Amazon has 16,000 book categories. So if you're able to place in the top 100 of any of those 16,000 categories, you are a best-selling author. And so I looked up my placement in one of those like categories, like, and there I was, number 39 in the personal money management category. And I was like, wait, I've been a best-selling author this whole time and I didn't even know it. It's crazy though, right? But like, it's all marketing. Like then I realized after that, wait, to win an award, no one just knocks on your door and says, hey, I loved your book so much, I want to give you an award. Like nobody does that. I realized that to win an award, you have to apply for an award. And to apply for an award, you have to fill out this application and pay $100.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in order to get recognized for your accomplishments, you have to apply. That's it. And the fact that I didn't win an award is because I didn't apply. So for my new book, The 5-Day Job Search, I was like, you know what? I'm going to add award-winning author to my list of accomplishments, right? So what I did was I applied to 50 book awards that I qualified for. I qualified for up to 50. I was like, I'm just going to apply for all of them and see what works out, because I don't know which ones I'm going to win or not. And then some of them have already come back. I've won 3 of them. So now I can add that to my title as well. So like all these like fancy, amazing things that you see in other people's bios who are not as qualified as you, and you're wondering, why are they getting opportunity and why not me? Why am I qualified and I'm here sitting with imposter syndrome? Why am I not as amazing as them? And the reason is because you haven't worked on learning how to market yourself. Someone else who's not as qualified has learned how to sell themselves. And that's why.
That's such a great point. I think it pulls back the curtain on a lot of what we think is happening. We look at these people, wow, she's award-winning, right? And then I think about that all the time too, because even in my field, I can't tell you how many emails I get with things like, we want to feature you as one of our of the top coaches in our magazine for only $3,000, you can be featured. it's something I've never heard of. And then I'll get to call myself right at the top of whatever their list is. So it's really great to sort of break down the mystique around this.
It's pay to play. That's what it is. Pay to play. Because when I worked for a real estate brokerage, the three partners, well, yeah, sure, they brought in like over $1 million in home sales, right? Especially in commissions as well. So yes, they are quite accomplished. But every year they had like this magazine that like got sent to our office. And they were always telling people in the office who they were training, like, you gotta like pay to be in this magazine. You know, like even if you're brand new and you haven't sold any homes, apply and pay for that placement in the magazine so you can call yourself a top 100 real estate agent in Boston. You know, because like once you get that title, it's like people are like, wow. And then like there's this allure around you and people want to work with you.
So tell us about your current book. Say more.
The current book. So the 5-day job search, I just released it back in August. And basically what I do is I don't just like cover imposter syndrome. I also talk about how you can improve in your own skill set. So because a lot of like imposter syndrome is like wondering, validating, do I actually know what I'm doing? I feel like I met only 50% of the requirements on this listing here. So I must not know everything. But people don't realize that the listing is just a wish list. It's like a wish list for Christmas for the employer, right? So what I do is I teach in the book how to fill in those gaps. So then once you fill in those gaps, you can actually feel more confident in knowing like, hey, you know, they're asking for these 10 things. I actually do know these 10 things. I am qualified. But the fact is, even if you meet half of them, you are qualified. And then what I also do is I teach you how to package yourself. So if we're thinking about this analogy, you are a present. You are a gift to the world. You have certain gifts and talents that you are here to share. God has bestowed them on you, right? And you have a mission. You have a vision. You're here to serve other people with these gifts, right? So your actual skill set and experience is the present. But in order to make it more attractive for other people, you need a nice wrapping paper and a bow to go with it and everything so that people are like, ooh, what's this pretty present? You know, I want to open it up and see what's inside. So basically what I do is I help people brand themselves so that you are more attractive in the marketplace and people want to call you and give you opportunity.
I love that. I love the imagery too around the wrapping paper and the bow because, so much of it is how you're packaging that skill set. What do you think people are generally getting wrong about it? What do you think that the most people don't understand about how to do what you're talking about?
I think the most common mistake is not what they don't understand. Most common mistake is that they screw up their headshot. Like if you go on LinkedIn or their Facebook or any social media profile, it's not a professional headshot. So what they're doing is they're taking a selfie and they're trying to take it in good lighting. But hey, that you're not doing your career justice. If you are really serious about your career, the photo also needs to convey the seriousness. Like, hey, I'm so serious about my career. I paid a professional to take this picture. Like, that's how serious I am. And not just that, like, to also show up to the photo shoot and pay attention to the small details, like the polish details. Like, for example, what are you wearing in the photo? That's something you can do before you go in. Like, try on all the different clothes in your closet and put, you know, look yourself in front of the mirror with it and then take a picture of you wearing it, because even if it looks good in the mirror, doesn't mean it looks good on camera. So take a picture of you wearing it. Right? And see, does it look good in the photo itself? And then once you pick your final outfit, make sure it's ironed. I don't want to see a single wrinkle in your photo, right? It's just those little tiny details. And then also, even if you're not photogenic, you can put your best foot forward, right? Because a lot of attractiveness is about like grooming yourself. If you notice, celebrities, they're not necessarily the most conventionally beautiful people, but they do know how to groom themselves to conventional standards, right? So for your photo shoot, go in there and right before you go in there, you got to schedule that haircut. Get a fresh haircut right before, you know, chop off all the split ends, just a trim if you need to. And if you're a lady, blow dry your hair, you know, so that's nice and sleek, gorgeous. And then also use a professional makeup artist because the lights in the studio, they're so bright and white. If you just do your makeup on your own and you're not familiar with camera makeup techniques, then you're going to look totally washed out like a ghost. So that's my tip for looking gorgeous, because I believe that people should put in just as much effort into looking great every day, especially for their photo, just as they do for advancing their career skill set.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point as well. And I wanted to ask you a little bit, because you've done so much of this yourself, for people who are feeling like, let's imagine this scenario that you described where it's, I meet 50% of the qualifications and there is a certain amount of flexibility there, because as you said, it's a wish list. It's not an expectation. What are some of the most efficient ways that you would encourage people to close gaps? Because one of the things that I'll just take a step back for a moment. One of the things that I encourage people to think about when they're looking at these lists is, if I don't meet certain bullets on the job description, is that really going to keep me from being able to do the job? Or is it something I could perhaps learn on the job, right? There are going to be certain things that are fundamental and crucial to your ability to effectively perform that role. And if you don't have that, you're going to be in a constant state of anxiety and self-doubt. But there are also some nice to haves, or some, if I had them, I might be able to do even more. How do you evaluate what the job description is asking for and then efficiently think about closing any gaps?
Right. So what I'm recommending people right now to do is, because ChatGPT is out and it's so new, what I tell people to do is I want them to copy and paste a job listing for their desired title in the industry that they want. And you copy and paste the entire listing into ChatGPT and you just prompt it, hey, this job is looking for an ideal candidate. Exactly what is this so-called ideal candidate that they're looking for? Like, what are the traits? What kind of skill sets, experience? Do an analysis for me, right? And it will, you know, pop out this two-page analysis. You do 20 of those. So 20 of that same prompt, but for 20 different listings. And then after that, you should have 40 pages of analysis, right? So basically, you're analyzing the analysis, not the job listing itself. And what you're going to see is there are trends. You're going to see over and over again, we want someone who knows how to use this specific software. We want someone who is a good communicator. We want someone who is a team player. We want someone who has experience and has this specific certificate. If you see this pattern again and again and again, it's very clear this is important. And if you're lacking it, you need to fill in that gap. If there are some things that are like in there, but are only repeated once or twice in 20 different job listings, then it's very clear that this specific thing they're looking for is specific for that company only. Because every company, you know, when they're hiring you, they have a certain way of doing things. And not every company follows a specific way. Like, they're not always doing it the same specific way. So that's what I recommend people do.
I think that's brilliant. And I think it's so helpful to think about using technology to do that, because it feels so daunting sometimes to figure out, how am I going to get this information? I'm going to have to talk to, you know, 50 different people.
Now you don't. This is so quick and easy. You can bang this out in 1 hour. Yeah, this is actually a way I recommend people to craft out their career plan.
It's a great idea. And then you had mentioned some of the strategies that you had used to do your own online learning. And are there things you've learned through that process that you would recommend, do's and don'ts for how to go about filling gaps in your skill set?
Yes. So one of the things I really liked is, because I'm a visual learner, I learn better with video. I always used Udemy. So what I like to do is, for any gaps that I had, if there was like a Udemy category for that gap, I would look in the category and I would look for the best seller course or the top rated course. And just watching, you know, two or three of those courses and taking notes was enough for me. And then after taking the course, I would implement the information that I learned. So I don't just like passively learn. What I do is, like, I take action. Anything. Like, if I read a book, I read an article, I always try to walk away with, like, okay, what's one piece of action that I can do based on the inspiration I got from learning this, right? Because I'm not like a passive learner. I think the reason I get results specifically is because I take action. A lot of people, like, they learn, they're really book smart, but they're just sitting there. You know, like, for example, my husband, he says, I care about the environment. I was like, okay, you care about the environment. That's all talk. What about, like, making sure you really separate the plastic and the paper? You know, like, and sometimes he argues with me, it doesn't matter. But then I'm like, your action needs to back up your beliefs, right? So same thing with the learning. You got to take action, not just like learn the material.
That's a really good tip for any of us, because I feel like we're all consuming a lot of information, but where does it go and how long does it last? And so at least for things that feel important to you, to be able to identify what are those top two, maybe whatever feels realistic, takeaways and action steps that you can put into place right away to cement the learning and really start to integrate it into how you go about moving forward.
That's right. Yeah. Lately, I want to add this on. This AI startup has been trying to get in touch with me. They're trying to, like, partner with me. They said, you know, because we like the fact that you're an author and we know in the future you might create a course to go with this. And we've developed this chat bot that can take the material from your book. And instead of, like, you answering questions for people personally, because that's very, really like time consuming and not scalable. What we can do is we can have this chatbot analyze your book, and anytime someone has a question, it will give them catered answers based on what's in the book. Right. So I tested it out. It's in beta mode and I just got it from them yesterday. So I was like trying it out. And sure, it's like spitting back out information that is based on my book. Like, what is branding? What does it mean to have imposter syndrome? Like, how do you overcome imposter syndrome? But the information wasn't really inspiring enough to take action. And then like, it wouldn't like push you to want to get up and take action. So while AI can teach you many things and while you can read a book, in the end, that desire to take action has to come from within. Because like, for example, I'm teaching someone right now on how to do a 5-day job search makeover. I'm literally holding his hand, walking him through it. I did his resume for him. You know, it was a 2-hour thing. And I said, you're ready to go. We have your resume. All you need to do is you need to apply to 50 jobs a day. Like literally go on Indeed and ZipRecruiter and click the easy apply button. And, you know, so that's like only 1 minute per application. So if you're doing 50 a day, it's only a 1-hour task, right? But he came back to me and he said he didn't do it, right? So that's the reason you don't get the results you're looking for, is because you're not taking action. And then when I looked at like the resume he was uploading and stuff, he had removed the contact information. So he took out his number, he took out his email address, he removed his mailing address. And I was like, hey, Peter, how is someone going to contact you if they're interested in you? So like, you know, like you can have all the right information, but if the action doesn't back it up, you're not going to get the results you want. It sounds ridiculous, right? You're laughing. It's really funny, but people self-sabotage themselves in this way. It's a form of self-sabotage.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it too. So how is your life different today, given everything that you've learned and all of the ways in which you've overcome your own self-doubt?
I feel a lot more confident. You know, I think the difference is, for sure, this is also in the book, for sure before I've had to have courage, because confidence comes from having repeated results of knowing that you know you're doing the job right, right? This is anything, okay? Like, let's say right now I'm learning piano. You know, I want to be a classical pianist, and people have been telling me, you can't learn piano as an adult. And I'm just like, well, let's see what happens after 10,000 hours. Will I be really good at it, or will I still suck, right? But I'm not confident. I'm not confident, right? If you ask me to play in front of you right now, that's not confidence, that's courage. I'm scared. That's courage, because like in my heart, like my heart's like beating fast. My chest is tight. My shoulders are tensing up. I'm like, oh my God, are my fingers going to know what they're supposed to do? Am I going to remember everything I practiced yesterday? Right. That's courage. That's courage. You know, it takes a long time with courage, like showing up despite feeling the fear, and, you know, feeling the fear and doing it anyway is courage. Courage doesn't feel good. We think courage is supposed to feel good, because when we see other people with courage, we see them as heroes. And heroes in our head is connotated with good, right? But courage, when you think about the bodily sensations that you feel, feels terrible. So for so many years, it was all courage. It wasn't until this year when I finally said, you know what? I'm a best-selling author. I'm an award-winning author. Oh my gosh, you know, and I'm getting more opportunities, that this has transformed into confidence. This was 10 years in the making.
And I love the way you said that, because I think that confidence follows courage for sure. We think sometimes that we're just going to wait until we feel confident, but that never happens. You don't develop confidence in a vacuum, right? Confidence follows doing the things that scare us. And eventually our brain starts to realize, oh, actually, I'm good at this. Actually, I deserve this. And so you're absolutely right that courage does not feel good. It's not something that we rush into willingly. It's an experience that's worthwhile, because on the other side of it, That's where we build confidence.
That's right. And you know what's so funny is the reason, I think one of these things, the reason I've been thinking about it, I'm not so sure, I don't have the proof, but the reason why we lack confidence when we're, as we're learning to do something, is because we are with ourselves all the time. So we see like the results that suck. Like I am learning piano, and every day I sit down, I am fully present with myself. The fact that I made a mistake here, my fingers aren't able to do this, this, and this, right? But other people, they don't see us 24/7. They are not with us every second of the day. So they will see like us at different intervals of the progress. So they don't see like the minutia of it. And then finally, one day when you are good, all they see is the fact that you are good. But your brain hasn't caught up with that yet. Your brain still remembers all the memories of you not doing it very well. That's why. It's because that's why other people, they point out like, wow, you, like for example, I'm telling my friend, your photography looks really good. Because all I see is what it is now. She's probably looking at it and thinking like, oh, but you know, I started learning and I was making all of these mistakes. So in her head, she's mixing that with what it is today. Like she's probably collapsed all of it into like one big salad bowl.
Yes, I love that visual too. I think you're absolutely right. And especially in an age of social media where we're only seeing people's highlight reels, especially to your point earlier around, you know, sort of having all of these different trappings that aren't even necessarily real. We look at people and we think, oh, they're so much better than I am because we are so aware of every little thing that goes wrong. But that's really important to remember because what you're seeing within them is not the full picture. And to just keep that in mind as we're evaluating ourselves. Yeah, this has been such a great conversation, Annie. Thank you so much for having it with me. For anybody who's interested in learning more about you, getting more of you, where can they go?
Kim, your audience can find me on annieyangfinancial.com. And if they really enjoyed everything that I've shared with them today on overcoming imposter syndrome, they can find so much more information in my book, The 5-Day Job Search. So on annieyangfinancial.com, they can add the book to the shopping cart. And with the coupon code IMPOSTER, IMPOSTER, they can get a 10% off discount on the signed paperback copy for a limited time only.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, Annie. It was such a pleasure to meet you and so great to have this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for having me today, Kim. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us, and please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.